This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Neurothera from Claire Labs. Your brain's complex metabolism requires many different nutrients for optimal performance. Neurothera is a broad-spectrum neuronutrition formula that supports the central nervous system and cognitive capacity. Used daily, Neurothera supports mental clarity and cognitive function. It provides the essential building blocks for optimal brain health. For more information and to purchase Neurothera, just go to my online dispensary at drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, who's our nutritionist in residence. She is, in her own right, a host because she hosts her own usually Friday session of Intelligent Medicine. What is on tap in terms of your Friday podcasts?
Oh, let's see. Yeah, various topics. And I thank you for all of your questions. Again, radioprogram at AOL.com. I've talked about smoothies. Somebody wrote in asking about the load of oxalate.
If I'm having a smoothie every morning. Like a kale. It's really popular.
Exactly.
Kale smoothies.
Right. Kale spinach smoothies.
Right.
And you know, what's the difference between...
Could it cause kidney stones? Could it cause... There is a type of arthritis that's related to oxalate overdose.
That's true too. And especially with gout or something like that.
Yeah. Well, and that's maybe a form of pseudo-gout. Yeah.
And why is it that some people really have to avoid spinach because they get kidney stones and other people don't? Well, that answer may lie with the microbiota.
Okay.
And Oxalobacter formigenes probiotics.
Well, let's not give it away.
You're going to have to listen to the podcast.
Okay, so find the podcast at drhoffman.com. Right. All right, let's get into our questions. And the intriguing question from...
Yes, from Charlie. Charlie writes, Dr. Katz mentioned a study that used 100 milligrams of aspirin for 6 weeks for erectile dysfunction. What say you?
Well, you know, it gives me meaning to take two and call me in the morning.
Yes.
Right? I just thought of that. So, you know, this is a sort of a subcategory of erectile dysfunction. Mm-hmm. There are many aspects to erectile dysfunction. I think a major aspect to erectile dysfunction is psychogenic.
Sure.
Is it to have sex, you have to relax, and B, you have to probably at some level relate to your partner.
Totally. You can't be mad at them.
Well,
you
can't feel sexy. Actually, you can be mad at them because rapists are extremely angry, and that's how they express their, you know, they have a different mentality. They're not in love with their victims.
So, okay, so it's passion.
It's like, you know, domination, and it's like
control.
A warped, you know, kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there has to be some emotional nexus to it.
Right.
And if you're worried and, you know, just like a baseball player in a slump, you know, it's like you're on a losing streak.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a psychogenic aspect to that.
Sure.
And that's pretty prominent, especially in young men. They may have normal testosterone. They may have normal blood flow. They don't have diabetes. They don't have nerve damage. You know, they're just not, it's not happening.
It's not happening.
Yeah.
Right.
So this, I believe, and I didn't hear his discussion of this. He does, by the way, he does a very nice radio program on locally here in New York. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
But I don't think it's heard across the country, but it may be a podcast. It's on WABC. It's on, I think it's 7 in the morning on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
That could put a dent in your sex life too, is it?
Well,
you know,
sure.
Listen to
unless
a urologist.
You're getting up early, getting ready for church or
right. Yeah.
Something.
So it's, you know, but you can listen to that show, and he's had me as a guest on several times,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, talk about nutrition issues related to urological conditions. And so he might have talked about this, but I think what he's talking about is if you have a vascular cause of your ED.
Yes.
Which is a less common cause of ED, but it can be a cause.
Okay, because what they found here is that erectile function...
Oh, you looked it up? You looked up the actual...
I looked it up,
oh,
right.
Good. Okay, tell
erectile
us about that.
Erectile function among men with vasculogenic erectile dysfunction
right.
improved significantly
yes.
after 6 weeks of treatment with an aspirin dose of 100
which
milligrams
is, you
a
know,
day.
81 milligrams a day is the dose for, you know, just general prevention.
Yeah.
So 100 milligrams is not like a massive dose. It's not going to give most people ulcers.
Yeah.
So it improves the platelets.
The platelets, yes.
Yeah, okay.
because large platelets are metabolically and enzymatically more active than small platelets, they produce more thromboxane.
Okay.
And which is a very potent vasoconstrictor.
Okay.
So aspirin takes, but this is the least likely cause of ED, you're saying? Is that?
Well, at least, I mean, I think in a certain population, you know, as men get older, that becomes a more likely scenario.
Yeah.
And especially men who have cardiovascular disease or diabetes.
Yeah, 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 absolutely. So as a matter of fact, ED could be the first clue of impending coronary artery disease.
Well, you know, the old, there's a meme, the erection is a dipstick for your cardiovascular status.
Is that
you know,
right? That's
if
good.
People still know what a, most cars don't have dipsticks anymore. So, you know, if those of us who remember what a dipstick is, you know, you used to, you know, stick it in and wipe it off.
I do.
Okay.
My old car.
Yeah.
Okay. 97. Yes. It's almost a classic.
Your car still has a dipstick?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
When I got
it's
my
a
car.
97.
I got my car in 2012. I said, so where's the dipstick? And the guy laughed. He says,
oh, they don't
he
do
says,
that.
Where have you been? He says, there are no dipsticks anymore. He says, it's all electronic now.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well. All right. I'm going to run my car into the ground. It doesn't matter anyway. So, aspirin therapy for this type of ED may be helpful.
I mean, hey, listen, Price is Right, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you do take aspirin, you should always take it on a full stomach. Not at night, as many doctors still recommend, which I don't understand. You should not take any aspirin on an empty stomach, even if it's enterocoded. So please make sure that you've eaten something. It's a good idea.
Good point at which to pause, because we, at this point, allow one of our sponsors to share an important message with you. So here it goes. Listen up.
Your brain's complex metabolism requires many different nutrients for optimum performance. Excessive release of adrenaline and cortisol, plus environmental exposures and oxygenation, may be impacting your alertness, memory, and other vital functions. This is Dr. Ronald Hoffman with a broad-spectrum neuronutrition formula that supports the central nervous system and cognitive capacity. It's NeuroThera from Claire Labs. NeuroThera provides balanced neuronutrition. Used daily, NeuroThera supports mental clarity and cognitive function. It promotes blood, oxygen, and glucose delivery to the brain and helps protect against oxidative stress and inflammation. NeuroThera provides the essential building blocks for optimal brain health. I believe in NeuroThera so much that I've included it in the Intelligent Medicine Brain Health Protocol. For more information and to purchase NeuroThera, just go to my online dispensary at drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsor. They're what make Intelligent Medicine a free resource to you. And now back to our questions. What's our next question, Layla?
Our next question is from Dan. Dan is actually commenting for you. Get a load of this. A year ago, my doctor put me on blood pressure meds and wanted to put me on cholesterol medication. By listening to you, Dr. Hoffman, my blood pressure is now 120 over 76.
Doesn't get any better than that.
Or lower without medication.
Awesome.
My cholesterol went from a total of 238 to below 200.
Good.
I just turned 64.
Awesome.
My physical shows I'm in perfect health and I take no meds. My new doctor loves my supplements.
All right. Well, that's an open-minded doctor. That's great.
That is wonderful.
Right.
That needs to catch on like wildfire.
Yeah.
With everybody's doctor.
So he dodged a couple of medications. He dodged a statin, probably.
Yeah.
And he dodged a blood pressure medication.
Yeah. Yeah,
and maybe several.
Yeah, and he's 64 years old without any medication. That's a wonderful thing.
Yeah, well, so, I'm 65 without any medication.
But you know better.
Except they take a million vitamins, so it's like...
That's it. And that's what Dan's doing. Dan, good for you. Best of luck to you. Continued good health. We have an email from Joanne. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I've been struggling with my health for many years. I've made a lot of progress having some green smoothies, eating cleanly, all of that. It's become clear in the past few years that I have chronic acute Epstein-Barr virus. Each time I'm
excuse me.
Yeah.
That's an oxymoron. Chronic acute. You take two words and there you look at in a dictionary and they are antonyms.
Ah.
Chronic and acute. But it sounds worse, like you got chronic Epstein-Barr and you've got Chronic, acute Epstein. It's like acutely chronic. It's worse.
It's worse.
It's really bad.
It's really bad. Oh, no. Yeah.
Well, it's bad Epstein-Barr.
Yeah.
Okay.
Each time.
I'm not trying to make fun of this, but I think we have to be careful with our terminology.
Yes.
And, you know, I have to say, this is not the first time that I've weighed in against the diagnosis of Epstein-Barr virus. Mm-hmm. That is so...
We're all walking around with it.
That kind of went out with, you know, it was introduced around the time of Duran Duran in the 1980s.
I like Duran Duran,
yeah. But, you know,
I don't like Epstein-Barr virus.
No, I don't like that definition, because if you're tired and run down, there may be a viral cause, but it's not that likely that you can pin it on one virus.
Right.
And the blood test for Epstein-Barr is not helpful because it's elevated in virtually everyone.
Okay.
And it is, unless you do, you know, maybe a PCR for it, a polymerase chain reaction for it, it just shows that your body has experienced Epstein-Barr at some point, which virtually everyone has, and it doesn't tell you whether it's active.
Mm. So Joanne wants to know, is there a protocol you recommend? She's been trying to follow another protocol, which includes lysine, monolaurin, olive leaf.
That's an antiviral protocol.
Cat's claw, lemon balm.
I don't accept the premise that she has a viral disorder. She may have a viral disorder, but from this, I can't tell.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, so what would we do for let's presume there's a viral, chronic virus in a person.
Are they presenting with any symptoms?
Well, like low-grade fevers, bodily aches and pains, fatigue and exhaustion.
Right.
But this is actually, the term Epstein-Barr virus has been superseded by a more sophisticated term, which is, in England they call it ME, myalgic encephalitis. Here they call it CFS, chronic fatigue syndrome. They tried to change the name because, you know, they changed it to CFIDS, chronic fatigue immunodeficiency syndrome, which also is not a totally accurate term. It goes beyond fatigue because it's malaise and exercise intolerance and sort of a panoply of symptoms. And there may be a multiplicity of causes. You know, people are run down in a variety of ways when they have this.
Isn't EBV also associated with mononucleosis?
It is.
Chronic fatigue?
No, the one place where you know EBV is the cause is when somebody develops mononucleosis, which used to be called glandular fever, and you have like big glands. Mm-hmm. You have an acute, that's acute Epstein-Barr.
Okay.
That's acute.
But not chronic, but acute.
Right. Chronic Epstein-Barr is an entity that is, I don't know,
It's not on a blood test. She's seeing it chronically.
Yeah, but that's...
She's seeing antigens.
Yeah, but somebody's selling her a bill of goods.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, and is not doing their homework because she has possibly a multifaceted, array of immunological, hormonal, even... neurological and brain biochemistry issues, inflammatory issues that cause this. And we're only plumbing the depths of this. Recently, they actually came up with, and this is very promising, they came up with a blood test that pretty accurately identifies whether people have CFS.
Okay.
It's about 80-some percent accurate. And it takes advantage of 24 different parameters in the blood.
Wow.
Which are a variety of things that they put together. Now, they could not have done this before the advent of computers, because to take 24 pieces of data and to put them together in a complex algorithm requires computer power. You can't sit there and, you know, do it with a pen and pencil or with a slide rule. You need to put this into a computer and crunch the data like with a mega computer. And then it comes out with a composite score that makes it more or less likely that you have CFS.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that it takes 24 different parameters to identify it suggests that 24 different things at least are screwed up in your body.
Wow. Pretty comprehensive.
Yeah. Mm. This is, and you know, people are going to say, well, we're going to get that blood test. It's in research. You're going to go to your doctor and say, give me the CFS blood test. And they will look at you like you're from Mars because it's in the research phase. It's not yet ready for prime time.
Yeah. Yeah. So what do you say to Joanne?
Well, I say, unfortunately...
Stop testing?
No. I'm saying Joanne needs to see an expert in the treatment of CFS.
Okay.
Whether it's, and there are some conventional experts, but most conventional experts do partake of, you know, natural elements of cure. They don't eschew the use of nutrition and vitamins. Yeah. And then there are the people who are functional medicine doctors, like myself, mm-hmm. who would treat it in a functional medicine way, which is, you know, let's see what your brand of CFS looks like. I mean, what is it predominantly? Mm-hmm. CFS that's due to a very active virus, or could you have Lyme disease, or do you have dysbiosis in your intestinal tract, or do you have some form of mitochondrial dysfunction?
Yes.
Do you have an autonomic nervous system problem? Do you have are your hormones whacked out?
Mm-hmm.
Is your cortisol
it's all of the above.
Or your thyroid? And then we can correct each of those things
mm-hmm.
and move people possibly towards health.
Yeah.
But it ain't easy.
Yeah.
And it's not a matter, if people say, well, what's the protocol? Yeah, it's simple. Like, I've got Epstein-Barr. I will take, what's the protocol? Lysine, vitamin C, No,
right.
that's not how this works.
I see. Yeah.
Give me the protocol. It's like, no, I'm sorry.
Okay.
It's not a paint by numbers thing.
Joanne, if you're in New York, you can come see Dr. Hoffman.
And or Layla, because you also, I think, can provide a pretty good perspective on some things to do.
Sure. Yes. Joanne, we wish you the best of luck. All right. We hope you feel better soon. Thank you for your question. Oh, now this is interesting. We've got an email from Jean. Just saw this article about the problems with drawing conclusions from a large group. Meta-analyses are probably worse. Thought you all might find this of interest.
Oh, great.
And there was a study.
Great.
I want to
see that.
This article, Unscientific Method, that a study finds that all these big data studies are just really one big mess.
Well, that's,
if anything.
That's great.
If anything.
Because unfortunately, a lot of studies, like recently they had a study that showed that vitamins are worthless. That was a meta-analysis.
Yeah.
And so, they talk in here about what are the problems with meta-analyses. They research which evaluates large groups of people leads to skewed results.
Mm-hmm.
In order to get better and more accurate grasp of mankind, the authors say scientists need to study people individually. I'm all for that because... You're not an average.
Yes.
Averages lose individuality, and a meta-analysis has a very leveling effect.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be that there may be subgroups of people who really do well with vitamins, and some people who do less dramatically well with vitamins. And if you do all the statistics, and it's the people who don't do that well may overwhelm the subgroup of people who do astonishingly well.
Yeah.
I agree with this. This is the first time I'm seeing it. It says, and I like this quote, diseases, mental disorders, emotions, and behaviors are expressed within individual people over time. A snapshot of many people at one moment in time can't capture these phenomena, argues study lead author Aaron Fisher, an assistant professor of psychology at the university. So, this guy's a very
mm-hmm.
prominent academic. And... finds that meta-analyses are lacking.
They are. I don't like the over-reliance on any of that. And again, I think at the end of the day, being practitioners, it's always about how that individual patient/client is presenting. They're going to have a unique biochemistry. This is why, with all this data in meta-analyses and research, and then the establishment of guidelines. How many times have you gotten a letter, Dr. Hoffman, saying, why did you not prescribe a statin for this patient who has a cholesterol of 201 or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Like that.
Exactly.
It's a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like...
Not looking at the particles or the HDL or any other risk factor that would be present or not present.
Yeah,
in your determining that,
yeah,
what they should do,
and also taking, into account the patient's preferences, the patient's possibly intolerance of the medication, so an example today is we saw a guy, 77-year-old, who has demonstrable coronary artery disease. Per a calcium scan, you know.
In
and I've been following him for many years. The guy is a runner. He does, you know, he does something like 12, 15 miles a week of running. He does strength training. He's lean and healthy. And, you know, I just physically examined him. His heart rate is strong and regular. And but he does have plaque. So when that goes to the insurance company, it says he has coronary artery disease. He doesn't do well on statins and prefers not to be on statins. His stress tests are fine. You know, according to, quote, meta-analysis, he would belong to a high-risk group and he would be someone lumped in with 77-year-old men who have heart disease who might benefit from statins. But in his case, it probably would have a slowing down effect on his exercise. It might have adverse side effects. He is doing great. And we have him on, you know, wonderful cardioprotective nutrients. You know, we mentioned earlier the study on chiolic aged garlic extract, vitamin K2. We have him on, you know, adequate levels of vitamin D and fish oil and bergamot.
And he's taking,
So anyway, but how do you express that in a, you know, when you get an edict that, doctor, you know, did you forget to put this person on a statin?
And this one particular researcher says in this article, quote, if you want to know what individuals feel or how they become sick, you have to conduct research on individuals, not on groups. So people shouldn't necessarily lose faith in medical or social science. Instead, they should see the potential to conduct scientific studies as part of routine care.
But that's such a
personalized
it is personalized medicine, but it's a relatively unpopular view because we believe in aggregate medicine and aggregate studies.
Well, to see an article like this gives me some encouragement that maybe the tide will start to turn.
It's in a prominent medical journal. The Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences is about as highfalutin as you get in terms of academic journals. Okay, on that note, and that hopeful note, let's conclude today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. And we wish you all a very enjoyable and relaxing summer. And we'll keep you company with dispatches from the front lines of Intelligent Medicine.
Thank you for listening.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
Hi, this is Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Many of us wonder sometimes what's going on with our brains, like when we can't recall a name that should be totally familiar to us or forget why we went into the kitchen. These worries take on a little more weight as we grow older. That's why I've created the Intelligent Medicine Brain Health Protocol, my personal supplement recommendations to slow cognitive decline and enhance memory and mental performance. Just go to drhoffmanstore.com. In addition to the Brain Health Protocol, you'll find easy-to-follow links for my Supplement Starter Kit, Heart Health Protocol, and much more. These protocols are an easy way for you to get the exact combination of targeted supplements you need to help you follow the intelligent medicine lifestyle. And for a limited time, you'll get free shipping on all of your store orders. For more details, just go to drhoffmanstore.com. That's drhoffmanstore.com.